Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we have the latest on California's reopening of the economy this week and what that means for the public, businesses, and event organizers. An excessive heat warning is in effect across the San Diego region this week, with temperatures as high as 120 degrees in the deserts. Find out where to find cool zones and what you should know to stay safe on today's show. Then, from 2021 Talks, we'll have some national and global news stories, including an update from the G7 Summit of World Leaders, a march for voting rights, vaccine distribution to poor countries, and migration issues. Do you know someone who has provided outstanding community service in San Diego's East County during the past year? In healthcare, public safety, environmental preservation, animal protection, social or racial justice, or humanitarianism? If so, please nominate them for our own East County Magazine Community Champions Awards. Find out how to submit your nominations on today's show. Authorities are asking for public help to find the driver of a white Honda Accord with tinted windows that ran over and seriously injured a woman in Casa de Oro, and they also need help to identify the victim. The pandemic has increased stress and sparked a new drug addiction crisis involving benzodiazepines, known as benzos. Learn more about the harmful effects of the long-term use of these prescription medications on our show today. June marks the 40th anniversary of the AIDS epidemic, and we'll have a report from California News Service. A sonic boom from fighter pilots training offshore may be responsible for that loud noise and shaking across our region last week, and we'll have details. California has appointed a committee that recently held its first meeting to discuss reparations for slavery's impacts in our state after a measure introduced by then-San Diego Assemblymember Shirley Weber. Learn more on what reparations might include and California's history involving slavery on today's show. El Cajon City Council has moved closer to implementing several police reforms and to verifying residency of candidates running for city offices. In Warner Springs, authorities made a major bust on a marijuana growing operation that was believed to be supplying black market dispensaries. Over the past year, many state election officials have quit their jobs after being harassed and threatened, and we'll have details in a report from California News Service. Full freeway closures will be happening this weekend in El Cajon due to bridge repairs at Interstate 8 and Highway 67, and we'll have the details on that later today for motorists. The state has issued a warning for outdoor enthusiasts to watch out for toxic algal blooms in California lakes. Movies in the park are back. Find out where to go to see them on today's show, and there are also virtual and drive-in options as well as in-person viewings. We'll also take you on the road to the Desert View Tower in Hukumba Hot Springs, one of East County's quirkiest and most endearing roadside attractions. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health report. Local businesses and event organizers got a welcome reprieve from COVID-19 restrictions even earlier than the full statewide reopening set to begin June 15th statewide. Starting June 10th, San Diego County moved into the state's least restrictive yellow tier after two consecutive weeks of fewer than two COVID cases per 100,000 residents. In San Diego County, 75% of residents aged 12 and older have received at least one shot, and 60.1% are now fully vaccinated. Dr. Wilma Wooten, San Diego County's public health officer, praised local residents. "You did it, San Diegans," she says. "You have followed the public health guidance and got vaccinated when the vaccine became available to you. These actions have resulted in a significant drop in COVID-19 cases in the region." But, she adds, "Now we need San Diegans to continue getting vaccinated so that we can get closer to herd immunity, and that includes second doses for those who receive the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine." The tier change means local residents can expand operations to levels not seen in over a year, and 1 week before the state's tier system disappears. Under the yellow tier, museums, zoos, and aquariums no longer have capacity limits. Restaurants, wineries, breweries, distilleries, gyms, and movie theaters can have up to 50% capacity indoors. Bars can have up to 25% capacity indoors, or 100 people, whichever is less. The yellow tier also allows private gatherings of up to 200 people if all guests are tested or show proof of full vaccination. Without such proof, gatherings of up to 100 people are allowed outdoors and up to 50% indoors. Live event indoor seated performances can have up to 50% capacity while guests are tested or show proof of full vaccination, or a maximum of 25% or 300 people otherwise. Outdoor live events with assigned seating, such as sports and concerts, can have up to 67% capacity with certain limits, such as in-state visitors only. When the tier system ends in California on June 15th, capacity and distancing restrictions will be lifted for most businesses and activities in the state, though vaccination or negative test result requirements will continue for large-scale indoor and outdoor events through at least October 1st.
As California reopens its economy starting June 15th, Governor Gavin Newsom has promised to return to business as usual, lifting most health restrictions and mandates, although counties are free to set their own regulations. As of June 15th, the state is ending its color-coded tier system. Now that most Californians are vaccinated against COVID-19, which has killed over 62,000 Californians. Going forward, the state plans to rely on federal health guidelines for public places, meaning most businesses won't have to impose social distancing requirements, capacity limits, or face shutdowns. However, businesses that want to protect the health of workers and customers, or that fear lawsuits, may still set their own limits. So don't be surprised if you still spot a few no mask, no service signs after June 15th, or if some event organizers voluntarily impose requirements for guests to provide proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test result. Some businesses have asked the state to provide a means for verifying vaccinations, and the governor has said a statewide verification process is in the works. Some restrictions will still apply to mega events that draw over 5,000 people indoors or over 10,000 outdoors. So large concerts, conventions, and other indoor mega events will only be open to people who can prove they've either been vaccinated or been tested negative for the coronavirus in the past 72 hours. That kind of proof won't be required at outdoor events such as baseball games, but the state is recommending that stadiums either impose such a rule or require masks. You will, however, finally be allowed to take off those masks inside a bar, gym, movie theater, or most other public places, but only if you're fully vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, keep wearing the mask. Everyone will still need to wear a mask, however, in areas with many vulnerable people, including hospitals and other healthcare settings, nursing homes, public transit, jails, and prisons. Masks will also be required in school classrooms for now, since younger children cannot yet get the vaccine. Now, as of our show taping deadline, Cal OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Board, has not yet voted on workplace rules, which are expected to be finalized June 17th and take effect June 28th. The board has, however, already voted to revoke an earlier vote that would have required all workers to wear masks if anybody in the workplace is unvaccinated, and also would have forced employers to buy N95 masks for employees. That change came after the California Retailers Association complained. The group's president, Rachel Michelin, says we can't be the mask police. Businesses asked how an employer was supposed to verify who's vaccinated and who isn't, and objected to the costs of buying masks. So it remains to be seen, as of now, whether vaccinated workers will be able to go mask-free, and whether any other requirements, such as social distancing or plexiglass barriers, may still remain in place. The state capitol is reopening to the public this week, though with capacity limits. Despite reopening the economy broadly, the state of California has an emergency declaration that has not yet been lifted. Keeping the declaration in place a little longer retains the state's ability to receive federal pandemic relief aid and to administer its own public health and economic relief programs. It also allows a rapid response if there should be an unexpected surge in COVID-19, such as due to new variants. The governor to date has used his executive powers through the emergency proclamation to get vaccines administered widely, freeze evictions and water shutoffs, allow local governments to hold public meetings via Zoom, and allow restaurants to operate on sidewalks and offer drinks to go. The legislature does have the power to end the emergency declaration, but that's not expected to occur anytime soon, CalMatters reports. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we have some important national news stories from Public News Service's 2021 talk.
The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning starting Monday, June 14th through Thursday, June 17th across Southern California. Freezes, along with dry conditions, will lead to elevated fire weather conditions each afternoon. Potential record-breaking temperatures are forecast, with low deserts reaching 115 to 120 degrees and high deserts 110 to 112 degrees. San Diego County's valleys could reach up to 101 degrees, mountains up to 95 degrees, and beaches up to 84 degrees. Soaring temperatures mean increased risk of heat-related illnesses, particularly for those involved in outdoor activities and vulnerable individuals. Drink plenty of fluids and stay in an air-conditioned room if possible. Wear lightweight and loose-fitting clothing when possible. Limit strenuous outdoor activities to early morning or evening. To reduce risk during outdoor work, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration recommends scheduling frequent rest breaks in shaded or air-conditioned environments. Know the signs and symptoms of heat stroke and heat exhaustion. A person with heat stroke may have a high body temperature of 103 degrees or higher, hot, red, dry, or damp skin, a fast pulse, headache, dizziness, nausea, confusion, or they may lose consciousness. If someone is unconscious, throwing up, or has symptoms that last more than an hour, call 911 immediately. Move the person to a cool or shaded location. You can help lower their temperature with cool, wet cloths while waiting for help to arrive. During extreme heat, please check up on friends and neighbors and never leave children or pets unattended in a vehicle, not even for a few minutes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
The county website initially did not list any cool zones when this extreme heat warning was issued. So after East County Magazine reached out to county officials to ask that cool zones be opened, the county notified us that it will open cool zones at community centers in Spring Valley, Lakeside, and Fallbrook, at the Santa Isabel Nature Center, and the Borrego Springs Library. Additional cool zones may be added, which will be published at the county's coolzones.org website, county officials informed us. Facial coverings are required at cool zones for everyone, regardless of your vaccination status. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we have some important national news stories from Public News Service's 2021 talk.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Merrick was back at the table and fully engaged.
President Joe Biden attends a NATO meeting today after wrapping up his first G7 summit, where leaders agreed to tackle China's growing influence, fight climate change, and donate more COVID-19 vaccines to poor countries. Wednesday, Biden meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin in what could be a contentious encounter over hacking and election meddling.
It's about making myself very clear what the conditions are to get a better relationship are with Russia. We're not looking for conflict.
Biden agreed with Putin's comments that the U.S.-Russia relations are at a low point.
Bowing down to oppression, bowing down to poverty, bowing down to politicians, that's not an option for us anymore. We will be forward together. We will mobilize. We will change this nation.
Reverend William Barber with the Poor People's Campaign will lead a march today to the West Virginia office of Senator Joe Manchin to protest the Democrats' opposition to the For the People Act. Manchin says he won't support the sweeping election reform bill due to staunch Republican opposition. Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock's among Democrats who want to pass the bill by ending the filibuster.
We have to stand up in this defining moment in America. We can't dance around Senate procedure. No Senate procedure, no Senate rule is more important than people's constitutional rights.
Meanwhile, Attorney General Merrick Garland said current state voting laws and practices will be reviewed by the Justice Department to determine whether they discriminate against voters of color.
We will apply the same scrutiny to post-election audits to ensure they abide by federal statutory requirements to protect election records and avoid the intimidation of voters.
A new report from the state's United Democracy Center found at least 216 bills in 41 states this year, which could suppress access to the ballot box, with 24 already signed into law. Co-founder of the center, former Republican New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman, worries legislatures are trying to usurp the duties of election officials.
The will of the American people cannot and should not be ignored, and the importance of local elected officials shouldn't be undermined. We have a system that works. It can be improved, but this is not the way to do it.
Whitman argues the Arizona audit of the 2020 election is based on former President Donald Trump's false narrative the election was stolen. However, Trump repeated the allegation during a video message to supporters at a Wisconsin rally, thanking those behind the Arizona recount.
These are incredible American patriots. And let's see what they do. That's their audit. It's not my audit. I have nothing to do with that. It's their audit.
A final report is expected in the next month. Nevada wants Iowa's spot as the first state to hold a primary during a presidential election year. A new law changes their contest from a caucus to a primary and moves the date to the first Tuesday in February. The national political parties must still approve the change.
There's a risk of new mutations that could threaten our people.
President Joe Biden said the U.S. will purchase 500 million doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to give to other nations. He made the announcement during his first overseas trip after meeting with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
We affirmed the special relationship, as is not said lightly, the special relationship between our people, and we renewed our commitment to defending the enduring democratic values that both our nations share.
Today, Biden meets other world leaders at the first day of the G7 summit. Back here in the States, a bipartisan group of senators says it's close to sealing the deal on an infrastructure plan. It would reportedly include less than the $1 trillion in new spending Biden proposes and would not raise taxes. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is trying to calm tensions after several Jewish members of Congress accused Representative Ilhan Omar of likening the U.S. and Israel to Hamas and the Taliban. The comments in question were made during a hearing when Omar said she had not seen evidence domestic courts can and will prosecute alleged war crimes in Palestine and Afghanistan.
I would emphasize that in Israel and Palestine, this includes crimes committed by both the Israeli security forces and Hamas. In Afghanistan, it includes crimes committed by the Afghan national government and the Taliban.
A dozen lawmakers accused Omar of giving cover to terrorist groups. In response, Omar accused them of Islamophobia. Omar later clarified her original comments were not a moral comparison and were not equating terrorist groups with democratic countries. Pelosi and top Democrats released a statement rebuking Omar for her original comments and thanking her for the clarification. A son of Pakistani immigrants has been confirmed as the first Muslim American federal judge in U.S. history. The Senate approves Zahid Qureshi for the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey. The number of undocumented migrants reaching the U.S. border with Mexico hit its highest level in two decades. 180,000 migrants were apprehended in May, the largest number since April 2000. During a House hearing, David Chahoulian with the Department of Homeland Security reiterated the Biden administration's strategy.
We must deal with the factors that cause people to flee in the first place, including the ongoing violence, corruption, natural disasters, and lack of basic opportunities. The plague, various countries in the region. We must also provide alternative lawful avenues for migration and for finding other forms of safety in the region.
Texas Representative Henry Cuellar wants President Biden and Vice President Harris to visit his district on the southern border. The Democrats calling for concrete action, noting people from more than 150 countries came into the U.S. last month.
You're going to have people from other countries. They're going to say, hey, all we have to do is bring a child and we'll be able to come in. And I wish that the administration would understand that that has an impact on our local communities.
Republicans have blamed Biden's policies for the border surge. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
Do you know someone who has provided outstanding community service in San Diego's East County during the past year in healthcare, public safety, environmental preservation, animal protection, social or racial justice, or humanitarianism? If so, please nominate them for East County Magazine's Community Champions Awards. Winners will be honored at East County Magazine's Party in Paradise event and awards ceremony slated for the evening of September 25th atop the Humula Casino's new rooftop pavilion with live music, tropical food and drinks, auction and raffle prizes, and presentation of awards to community champions who have tirelessly given back to help those in need. Send your nominations to editor@eastcountymagazine.org with Community Champions nomination in the subject line. Again, that's editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Include the nominee's name, organization, contact information, and up to 250 words on why you believe they're deserving of the recognition. The deadline to submit nominations is August 5th.
The California Highway Patrol seeks public help to identify a hit-and-run driver who ran over a woman in Casa de Oro shortly after midnight on June 10th, seriously injuring her. Public help is also sought to identify the victim. The driver was heading east on Kenora Drive, just east of Kenwood, in a vehicle believed to be an older, white, two-door Honda Accord with four tinted windows. The vehicle ran over an unidentified woman who, for unknown reasons, was lying in the roadway. She sustained major injuries and was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital in San Diego for treatment. The suspect vehicle was last seen fleeing eastbound on Kenora Drive towards South Bonita Street. The Honda Accord may have damage to its front bumper or undercarriage. Anyone who may have witnessed this event or has any information regarding this incident is urged to contact investigator Travis Garo with the California Highway Patrol in El Cajon at 619-401-2000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
An ongoing study by the National Center for Health Statistics in partnership with the U.S. Census Bureau shows that at least a quarter of all Americans have experienced anxiety during the COVID-19 pandemic. And in California, that statistic was almost one out of three. San Diego County residents can take advantage of many options to improve mental health, such as exercise, meditation, group or individual counseling and therapy, and medication prescribed by a trained mental health professional, as well as needed medication at times when prescribed by a professional. But now one type of medication, known as benzodiazepines or benzos, are causing a new wave of addiction problems, says David Shorey, East County Program Manager at the Institute for Public Strategy. Benzos include drugs such as Xanax, Valium, Librium, Ativan, Halcyon, and Klonopin. Most benzodiazepines are recommended to only be used for weeks or months to treat specific medical conditions on a short-term basis. But unfortunately, the trend for benzos appears to have shifted to long-term dependence. Like the opioid crisis, this is having devastating effects. Benzos slow brain activity, causing drowsiness or calmness. Common side effects include dizziness, weakness, and slowed breathing. Doctors are cautioned about prescribing benzos concurrently with opioids because of the increased risk of side effects. Severe and life-threatening reactions from benzos can include seizures, depression, hallucinations, homicidal thoughts, psychosis, suicidal thoughts and behavior, delirium, and catatonia. With all of the attention being focused on the opioid crisis in America, the threat posed by benzos in San Diego's East County, throughout California and the rest of the U.S. is overshadowed. But these drugs are quickly emerging as the next potential drug crisis. Even when benzodiazepines are prescribed and used properly, decreasing the dosage gradually can still cause withdrawal symptoms such as panic attacks, tremors, anxiety, blurred vision, memory problems, irritability, insomnia, muscle pain and stiffness, and abnormal involuntary movements. Risks are greater when used recreationally with alcohol and opioids. The popularity of benzos among recreational drug users and the increasing existence of these pills on the black market prompted the U.S. Food and Drug Administration last year to require labels on benzodiazepines warning about the risk of abuse, addiction, physical dependence, withdrawal, and other serious side effects. But the warning came 60 years after the first benzodiazepine was approved for use by the FDA back in 1960. Now, benzos can have treatment benefits when used properly. With any prescription, use only according to the doctor's recommendation and be sure to let your doctor know if there are any side effects. It's also important to keep an eye out for the onset of addiction to any medications and to properly dispose of all unused prescription drugs, such as through the county's Drug Take-Back Day. Misuse of prescription drugs can be dangerous or even deadly. Information and resources for substance abuse disorder are available by calling the county's Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240. Again, that number for the crisis line is 888-724-7240. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
40 years ago this month, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported the first cases of what would become known as HIV/AIDS and touch off an epidemic that took 32 million lives across the globe and 700,000 in the United States. Rick Chavez-Zbur is executive director of the nonprofit Equality California, a job he's about to leave to run for state assembly. He says Americans mustn't forget the terrible toll of this disease.
I lost literally scores of friends to the disease and watched our government pretty much do nothing about it for over a decade. And so as I think about the 40th anniversary, I think we need to remember all the people that were lost.
He adds the huge loss of life and perceived inaction by the Reagan administration motivated groups like Equality California to help elect leaders who would take the disease seriously, including President Bill Clinton and Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. Today, HIV treatments make it possible for 38 million people worldwide to live with HIV, including 1.2 million Americans. Chavez-Zbur says he's proud of the leading role California has played in making new medications more accessible.
I mean, California is one of the few states that insurance fully covers PEP and PrEP and Medi-Cal, and that's not the case across the country, so we need to reduce the barriers for medication that can prevent HIV.
Advocates would also like to see the repeal of laws in multiple states that criminalize the transmission of or perceived exposure to HIV and other infectious diseases, arguing that these laws serve as a major disincentive for people to get tested. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
People across San Diego County reported hearing a loud boom that rattled windows throughout our region on the evening of June 8th. Many thought the noise and shaking were caused by an earthquake, but the U.S. Geological Survey confirmed that no quake occurred. Now, the Marine Corps Air Station at Miramar has issued a statement confirming that the noise may have been a sonic boom caused by military fighter pilot training underway at supersonic speed offshore. According to a press statement issued by the Marines, the cause may have been aircraft training in a range 30 miles southwest of San Diego over the Pacific Ocean. Two units had departed from the Miramar base and were conducting simulated air-to-air combat training when the noise was reported. It's impossible to be certain whether this was the source of the loud boom and shaking reported as far inland as East County. The Marine Corps press release notes, "There are many different factors that would cause a sonic boom to travel large distances from its source," adding that variations in temperature and humidity can create atmospheric conditions that may cause sound waves to travel further than usual. Since the mid-1970s, the Federal Aviation Administration has largely restricted supersonic flight over land. But over the Pacific, at that distance from shore, supersonic speed is within all FAA statutes and military regulations, according to the Marines. The Miramar base is strategically located within one flight's distance of 67% of the military airspace in the U.S., so ranges like this one are vitally important for aerial training of combat aviators for our national defense, the Marine Corps statement concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Angela Kurish.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
For more than three decades, black members of Congress have introduced legislation to study the lasting harms of slavery on African Americans and propose remedies. Year after year, the federal proposal languished. Now California is going it alone, CalMatters reports. This month, California's first-in-the-nation task force to study reparations met for the first time, kicking off a two-year process to study the consequences of slavery and systemic racism against African Americans in California. The Reparations Committee of nine prominent lawyers, academics, politicians, religious and civil rights leaders, many of whom are descendants of slaves, will make formal recommendations on how the state should make reparations. Secretary of State Shirley Weber, a former state assembly member from San Diego who introduced the legislation last year, told the Reparations Committee, "You are here today not just to seek an answer to say was there harm, But your task force is to determine the depth of the harm and the ways in which we are to repair that harm. The task force's kickoff came just over a year after the killing of George Floyd sparked a summer of national uprisings against police brutality and racism, paving the way for a state of California laws aimed at addressing racial injustices. It also coincided with the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre, in which a white mob killed hundreds of black residents and burnt a flourishing African-American neighborhood known as Black Wall Street to the ground. The Reparations Committee, appointed by the governor and legislative leaders, will meet at least 10 times and then release a report with the committee findings and a second report on recommendations for reparations over the next 2 years. The legislature would need to pass more laws to implement any recommendations. During an hour-long virtual public comment session, callers from across California urged the task force to make its meetings more accessible by streaming on social media and holding weekend sessions. Many callers also urged a media campaign to educate Black Californians about the task force. The Reparations Committee is likely to dig up chapters of the state's history unknown to many. Staff at the California Department of Justice's new Racial Justice Bureau set the stage by presenting archival photos. One showed Mifflin Gibbs, a black civil rights activist from San Francisco who helped fund the legal case of Archie Lee. Lee was brought to California as a slave in 1857 but escaped. He was returned to slavery by a panel of California Supreme Court judges, which included Peter Burnett, a former slaveholder who served as California's first governor and tried to ban black people from the state. Lee eventually did win his freedom. When California joined the Union as a free state in 1850, the state soon enacted a fugitive slave law that allowed slaves provided they were eventually sent back to the South. A question facing the task force is how culpable the state of California was in supporting slavery. Department of Justice staff presented evidence of post-slavery discrimination with lasting health and education consequences. They showed how a 1937 redlining map of Oakland mirrored a recent map of areas vulnerable to public health disasters, such as COVID-19. They also referenced continuing racial segregation in education, such as the Sausalito-Marin City School District, which a court ordered to desegregate in 2019. The Reparations Committee must also consider institutions that benefited from slavery, such as Penn Mutual Life Insurance Company, which wrote policies to insure slaves for slaveholders. The mental health and housing consequences of slavery emerge as priorities for the task force. Assemblyman Reginald Jones Sawyer, a task force member, said, "We're all suffering to this day from PTSD from slavery, post-traumatic slavery disorder. It's really important that we don't forget the trauma that is still in us, hundreds and hundreds of years of us being abused, of us dying, being lynched." Another member urged the task force to pay attention to the other side, why people and institutions supported slavery and racism throughout history, and why some continue to oppose reparations. Dr. Cheryl Grills, a clinical psychologist on the task force, said if we don't go to the root cause in terms of the human psyche and the human condition, we'll only be doing window dressing. Task force members discussed how redlining and other forms of housing discrimination have barred many families from accruing generational wealth and accessing stable housing. State Senator Stephen Bradford, who serves on the task force, gave the example of Bruce's Beach, a black-owned resort, which the city of Manhattan Beach seized in the 1920s. Bradford has introduced legislation to return that land to Bruce family descendants, a potential model for state reparations. Amos Brown, a civil rights leader and president of the San Francisco NAACP, pointed to more recent urban renewal programs that displaced thriving black neighborhoods. Brown, who is also a pastor, will serve as co-chair of the task force. More than 2.5 million people who identify as black or African American live in the Golden State, representing about 6.5% of the population in 2019, but they accounted for more than 40% of California's homeless population. One of the most controversial decisions ahead of the panel is whether to recommend that California send direct payments to any African American residents. A growing number of U.S. cities, Asheville in North Carolina, Evanston in Illinois, and Providence in Rhode Island, for example, have begun reparation processes, emphasizing remedies that reinvest in African American communities, but all have shied away from sending direct payments, which leaders argue is the federal government's responsibility. Scholars are split over the right approach. Duke University economist William Darity Jr. and folklorist writer Kirsten Mullen testified at the meeting, arguing that true reparations require both apology and direct payments. They co-authored a book titled From Here to Equality, Reparations for Black Americans in the 21st Century.
Darity and Mullen said that in the international history of reparations, spanning post-Holocaust Germany to post-apartheid South Africa, only the United States' formal apology and payments of $20,000 each to Japanese Americans interned during World War II counts as true reparations. A Japanese-American lawyer, by the way, who helped lay the legal foundation for that process, Don Tamaki, also serves on the task force. But other scholars, including University of San Diego law professor Roy Brooks, have argued for reparations in the form of long-term investments in education, homeownership, and wealth among African Americans. Bradford suggested free education to descendants of slaves at Cal State and UC systems and first-time homebuyer assistance are examples of what reparations can look like without bankrupting the state. Still, Javon Scott Lewis, a Berkeley geographer on the task force, said he'll push for cash payments. Direct payments on the order of those given to Japanese Americans, or much larger, as many scholars have called for, could figure in the billions of dollars for California. However, cash reparations may face fierce opposition from the public. A recent Reuters-Ipsos poll found that only 1 in 10 white respondents across the country supported cash reparations, while half of black respondents endorsed it. Those who oppose reparations, including many Republicans in Congress, often argue that it would take money from a group of people who never contributed to slavery and give it to another group who never experienced slavery. California Reparations Committee members made clear that they hope their work will boost federal efforts to pursue slavery reparations. Momentum is growing across the nation. Illinois may soon follow in California's footsteps, and this year, House Resolution 40, the perennial bill in Congress to study reparations, has gotten closer to becoming law than ever before. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom said at last week's meeting, "As our country reckons with our painful legacy of racial injustice, California again is poised to lead the way." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
At its June 8th meeting, held in person at 50% capacity, El Cajon's City Council addressed several major agenda items, including police reforms and proof of residency requirements for mayoral and council candidates to live in the districts where they run. The city manager also provided some good news on the city's budget. The residency issue arose in the last election when opponents accused City Council candidate Humbert Cabrera of not living in the district in which he was running. Documents obtained through public records requests showed two conflicting addresses for Cabrera, who claimed he did live in the district he sought to represent. The city attorney noted that under state law, which takes precedent over any city regulations, a candidate could legally move into a district after winning an election. So requiring proof of residency could conflict with the state requirements, but seeking voluntary disclosure is an option. Councilman Gary Kendrick called it, quote, a direct attack on democracy, end quote, for a candidate to deceive voters about where the candidate lives. Since the point of the city moving to district elections instead of citywide election was to assure that each district has its own representation, including districts that have a majority of residents who are ethnic or racial minorities. Council directed staff to come back with an ordinance asking candidates to voluntarily release documentation to prove residency. Refusal to do so would then raise questions with the voting public, Kendrick noted. The council also addressed multiple police reform measures. Rather than defund the police, the city is pouring more money into programs aimed at minimizing the use of police force. City Manager Graham Mitchell said that the city's police chief supports these measures. El Cajon has had racial justice marches and rallies over the past year and also drew controversy in 2016 when a white police officer shot and killed Alfred Olongo, a black man suffering a mental health crisis, after Olongo pointed a vaping device resembling a gun at the police officer. Council members, with the mayor absent, voted unanimously to support the spending of $100,000 to fund de-escalation training for police and to use $500,000 of federal funds to launch a pilot program to outsource responses to nonviolent emergencies to social workers. Kendrick said these actions could save lives, adding, quote, I invite other cities to follow us. A vote is expected to be taken at the June 22nd meeting. At the suggestion of Councilman Steve Goebel, the city will consider spending $100,000 of its hefty reserves to fund the de-escalation training. Councilwoman Michelle Mitchell said the city should be proactive since citizens have asked for de-escalation training and more non-lethal weapons. She also supports a pilot program to send social workers instead of police to non-violent situations such as calls regarding a mental health crisis. The police reform funding discussion was part of a conversation on the 21 to 2022 budget. Clay Schoen, the director of finance for El Cajon, gave some good news on the city's bottom line. Despite the loss of sales taxes from local businesses during the pandemic shutdowns, as a result of a Supreme Court case which provides cities more revenues from online sales, El Cajon made $1.5 million in added sales tax as consumers shifted their shopping to online during the COVID-19 crisis. The council also discussed how to spend federal American Rescue Plan funds, which can be used on COVID-19 responses and more. Staff proposed allocating the grant money as follows: 68% to mitigate economic impacts on households and businesses, 20% to replace public sector revenue reinvested into city infrastructure, 8% invested into infrastructure, and 4% for COVID-19 response and mitigation. The council also discussed whether or not to continue broadcasting meetings on Facebook Live and Zoom, as well as allow public comments via the webmaster, once in-person meetings can resume at full capacity as anticipated after California's June 15th reopening. No action was taken on these items, which will all come back for decisions at future council hearings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Angela Kurish with a Crime Beat report. Nearly 4,000 marijuana plants with an estimated street value of nearly $1.5 million were seized Friday morning, June 4th, after a search of a property on Chihuahua Valley Road in Warner Springs. Detectives from the San Diego Sheriff Department's Special Investigation Division, members of the Special Enforcement Detail, and partner agencies served the search warrant as a part of an investigation of illegal marijuana cultivation and sales in San Diego County. The warrant followed community concerns about illegal marijuana operations near schools and residential areas. The county's code enforcement, investigators from California Water Board, and San Diego Gas and Electric also assisted in the operation. They found numerous violations that were creating a dangerous situation, as well as environmental-related crimes on the property due to the illegal cultivation. According to the Sheriff's Department, it is not uncommon for investigators to find dangerous chemicals, illegal pesticides, and other hazardous materials used at unlicensed marijuana grow sites. These may enter the local groundwater supply and streams, creating extreme environmental hazards. According to the Sheriff's Department, marijuana cultivation sites are also often sources of products unsafe for human consumption, which are sold at illegal dispensaries in our communities. Investigators believe the marijuana at the Warner Springs grow site was destined for unlicensed Southern California pot shops, not legally licensed dispensaries, which are required to follow stringent state guidelines, including inspections, to assure product safety.
California has lost about 15% of its election officials since the 2020 presidential contest, at least in part due to unprecedented levels of harassment and threats against them, according to a new report. The study from the California Voter Foundation found many election officials endured death threats, other threats of violence, and abusive comments. UC Berkeley researcher and study author Grace Gordon says a lot of the vitriol is linked to false allegations of election fraud.
Social media companies need to work with election officials to identify mis- and disinformation and then take this false information off of their platforms immediately.
2020 was the first time an American president refused to accept defeat and has repeatedly targeted election officials with unfounded allegations of fraud. Matthew Masterson with the Stanford Internet Observatory agrees. The last election produced unheard-of levels of hatred and harassment.
the scope, scale, and vile nature of the threats of the comments in this election is unlike anything we've seen.
About 75% of election officials are women, and the report found many of the insults have been misogynistic in nature. California Voter Foundation President Kim Alexander urges states to step in.
We are at risk of losing an entire generation of institutional knowledge if we don't act quickly to show the support and give the resources that election officials need to feel protected and do their jobs well.
The report warns a mass exodus of election officials will harm the nation's ability to hold free and fair elections and undermine democracy. It advises states to fully fund local election boards, foster better communication between election officials and local journalists, and fund voter education programs. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Do you know someone who has provided outstanding community service in San Diego's East County during the past year in healthcare, public safety, environmental preservation, animal protection, social or racial justice, or humanitarianism? If so, please nominate them for East County Magazine's Community Champions Awards. Winners will be honored at East County Magazine's Party in Paradise event and awards ceremony slated for the evening of September 25th atop the Humula Casino's new rooftop pavilion with live music, tropical food and drinks, auction and raffle prizes, and presentation of awards to community champions who have tirelessly given back to help those in need. Send your nominations to editor@eastcountymagazine.org with Community Champions nomination in the subject line. Again, that's editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Include the nominee's name, organization, contact information, and up to 250 words on why you believe they're deserving of the recognition. The deadline to submit nominations is August 5th.
Starting July 1st, all phone calls and video calls from San Diego County jails will be free, the Sheriff's Department has announced, although the South Bay Detention Facility does not yet have video visit capability. People in custody have access to telephones in the common rooms of housing areas in all jails. Local long-distance and international calls will be free. A person can make unlimited phone calls per day, though to give everyone equal opportunity to use the phone, each call will be limited to 15 minutes. Video calls are also free in San Diego County's jails. These calls will be 30 minutes in length and must be scheduled in advance. To afford everyone the opportunity to see their loved ones, video visits are limited to 2 a week. You can access video visits with any cell phone or a computer with internet access and a webcam. Friends and family must create a video visitation account and book appointments online a day before your video visit. When you reserve, you will need to provide your name, date of birth, email address, and phone. Sheriff Bill Gore says, "We are committed to facilitating positive interactions and outcomes for the people in our custody. Providing free phone and video calls will go a long way in fostering strong family connections, which are crucial to successful reentry," the sheriff adds. For more information on phone, video, or in-person visits, you can visit sdsheriff.gov/calls. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Caltrans crews are working on bridge repairs at the intersection of Interstate 8 and State Route 67 in the El Cajon area. The work will require full closures starting on Friday, June 18th. Motorists are encouraged to avoid the area if possible and to prepare for delays by allowing additional travel time to reach their destinations. In addition, ongoing lane closures on both directions of I-8 from a half mile west of Valentine Street to just east of Valentine Street will continue Sunday through Thursday nights from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. Closures and detours will continue on Friday, June 18th, starting at 9 p.m. through Monday, June 21st at 5 a.m. Here's what will be closed. A full highway closure of all westbound lanes of Interstate 8 from a half mile west of Valentine Street to just east of Valentine. The exit from northbound Highway 67 to westbound 8. The exit from southbound Highway 67 to eastbound 8. The Mollison Avenue on-ramp to westbound 8.A detour map will be provided before the closure dates. Detours will be in place during the construction schedule. Caltrans asks motorists to please drive with caution during the extended repair work, which is slated for completion in mid-August.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
With weather warming up, the California Water Resources Control Board is warning the public that harmful algal blooms, or HABs, can flourish in summer and cause serious health impacts for humans and pets. Marissa Van Dyke, an environmental scientist with the State Water Board, says children and dogs playing in the water are especially vulnerable to HABs exposure and illness. Most harmful algal blooms are formed by cyanobacteria, small microbes that multiply rapidly during warm weather in slow-moving water, forming these harmful blooms. Drought conditions also drive up growth of HABs when water levels are below normal. Recently, the state's water board and partner groups gathered water samples from lakes and streams with a history of HABs and published cautions, warnings, or danger ratings where the harmful blooms were found. Harmful algal blooms could be a variety of colors, such as green, white, red, or brown, and may look like thick paint floating or small flakes on the water. Not all HABs appear on the water's surface. Some form mats at the bottom of a water body. Others float at various depths. Look closely at the bottom of a lake or stream before entering the water. The State Water Board recommends that people practice healthy water habits while enjoying the outdoors this summer at your local lake, river, or stream. Heed all instructions on posted advisories if present. Avoid algae and scum in the water and on the shore. Keep an eye on children and pets. Think a harmful algal bloom is present, do not let pets and other animals go into the water or drink the water or eat algal scum on the shore. Don't drink the water or use it for cooking. Wash pets and people with clean water after any water play. If you catch a fish, throw away guts and clean fillets with tap water or bottled water before cooking. And avoid eating shellfish if you think a harmful algal bloom is present. Recreational exposure to cyanobacteria and associated toxins can cause eye irritation, skin rash, mouth ulcers, vomiting, diarrhea, and cold and flu-like symptoms. Dogs are most susceptible because they often drink while in the water and lick their fur afterwards, increasing their risk of illness. Symptoms with animals include vomiting or diarrhea, lethargy, abnormal liver function, trouble breathing, foaming at the mouth, muscle twitching, and even death. Get medical treatment immediately if you think that you, your pet, or your livestock has gotten sick after going in the water. Be sure to alert a medical professional to the possible contact with cyanobacteria. Also, make sure to notify the local county public health department to report a harmful algal bloom or call the HAB hotline toll-free at 1-844-729-6466. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
San Diego County's summer movies in the park are back, after being canceled last year due to COVID. This year, Summer Movies in the Park will be a hybrid series with showings on lawns in parks across our region, as well as viewings from cars and online, so you can choose your own movie adventure. Now in its 14th year, Summer Movies in the Park will be held in the cities of San Diego, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Oceanside, Poway, and Vista, along with unincorporated areas such as Julian, Escondido, Lakeside, Pine Valley, Ramona, Rancho San Diego, and Spring Valley. It even includes several showings on the historic USS Midway ship. Most movies will be in parks with vast open space where you can set up chairs, spread a blanket, enjoy a picnic, and relish entertainment under the stars. Music will play before each show, with some parks offering live games and activities, while others will have food trucks. Five shows will be purely virtual, requiring an online RSVP and a code for 24-hour movie access. Your efforts will be rewarded with a free Movies at Home kit filled with recipes, games, and other activities. This season's movies include Toy Story 4, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, Raya and the Last Dragon, and Soul. To celebrate National Parks and Recreation Month in July, you can watch Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest. Five shows will be set up as park drive-ins, so you can pack the car, head down, and grab a spot near the big screen to enjoy classics like The Karate Kid, The Sandlot, and The Goonies. Parking will be limited at these events, so arrive early. All movies are rated G, PG, or PG-13, and clearly labeled when you download the full schedule of movies, which run from June through October. For a full listing of movies, you can visit summermoviesinthepark.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Raina Menashe.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.